You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Hindutva, a cultural ideology related to Hindu nationalism, has grown over the past decade or two inside India and abroad in some Hindu diaspora communities. Activists inside the Indian community in Aotearoa have faced harassment and targeting from Hindutva believers and have raised concerns about its growth here. I spoke to Sapna Samant, a member of the Aotearoa Alliance of Progressive Indians and a Green candidate in this year's election, about Hindutva's origins and its rise in India and abroad.
Hindutva as an ideology is fascism that is disguised as a rigid form of Hinduism that is, you know, it's just a fascist ideology, pretty much, no difference. Hindutva was inspired by the fascism in Europe in the 1920s. So Mussolini, Hitler, these are their idols. And so they have taken a pluralistic religion and turned it into a monolith that is meant to to affect every part of your life, from, you know, from how you live your life personally to governing a nation, or not governing one for that matter, because fascism is, you know, it's a dictatorship. Yeah,
Hindutva has been described as a fascist or Hindu supremacist ideology, especially against marginalized communities in and outside of India. What groups in general is kind of Hindutva opposed to?
So they're hugely Islamophobic. There's also the Dalit communities, the caste oppressed communities within that are not Muslim, but they don't always identify as Hindu either. You know, a lot of them are Buddhists. For that, it's hugely misogynist because it's very patriarchal. So even if it is not, I mean, women are still a minority across the world and in India. So yes, it's women and indigenous communities, Christians, and anybody who identifies themselves as not Hindu. Like, they don't need to follow Hindu religion. You can be, have been born into a Hindu family, but if you're an atheist, then you're targeted.
Would you be able to describe Hindutva's connection to the ruling BJP, or India's People Party, along with its current leader, Modi?
Yes, so the BJP was founded by the RSS, which is the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, which is the mothership of Hindutva. So they founded this political party with the aim of ultimately governing India, or Bharat, as they call it. And this Narendra Modi used to be a volunteer with the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, RSS, since he was a child. So deeply indoctrinated by their ideology. So he has got everything, you know, the Islamophobia, misogyny, anti everything which is not Hindu, not upper caste Hindu particularly. And he's now the prime minister, and he just applies that ideology to everything in India.
Yeah, there's been an increase in violence inside India against religious minorities and other marginalized groups over the past few years, especially after Modi took office in 2014. What forms have these attacks taken, and what has been their impact?
So first of all, let's go back a few years before, when Narendra Modi was the chief minister of the state of Gujarat. In 2002, there was a massive riot that happened after a train was burnt. Passengers in a train were burnt in a place called Godhra in Gujarat. And I can't explain it to you quickly over this little interview, but what Narendra Modi did was, so this was Hindus killing Muslims. And what Narendra Modi did was that, as the chief minister of the state, instead of stopping this violence, he just stayed silent with with the sort of the quiet instructions that nobody should be interfering in this violence. And so a lot of Muslims were killed. A lot of people, you know, women were raped. A lot of people were made homeless. And that ideology he carried into his campaign, the Gujarat model, which is ostensibly an economic model of success, but also has this underlying issue to it, that he carried into his campaign to be the prime minister in 2009, the first time he became the prime minister. And then that has gradually increased over time. So in 2014, when he became the prime minister first time, and then 2019, when he was elected for the second time, is when he's used that same thing. So there's of silence of authorities just cracking down on any dissent. It's just become worse over a period of time because anybody who says anything is pretty much either put into jail or the some finance issue, if they're entangled in some finance issue or some court case or something like that, taking away all their energies and bulldozing, you know, Muslim homes and things like that, which has become really bad. But this is that ideology from 2002, that same model that he's carried into when he campaigned to be the prime minister in 2014.
You know, I think I'd want to move on to the spread of Hindutva outside of India. It's become more prominent in Hindu diaspora communities through social media and a number of other means. What has been the impact of this spread?
Pretty bad. It's invisible. Mainstream, mainstream societies do not see it because it's within the community. So Hindutva groups have established themselves in the diaspora for a long time now. For example, in Aotearoa, New Zealand, you have the Hindu Council of New Zealand, which, if you examine their, constitution, you will see that they are based on the Vishwa Hindu Parishad, which is the World Hindu Congress, which is another related avatar of RSS. And they bring that ideology of Islamophobia, misogyny, anti-minorities into the communities, into the Indian communities, wherever they are. So if I speak from an Aotearoa perspective, this has been going on in the community, in the Indian community for a really long time now. I highlighted it first in 2006 or 2007 when they had the first Hindu council, the first Hindu conference in Aotearoa, in Auckland. And what it essentially does is that it creates a narrative of who an Indian is. And who an Indian is a model minority, upper caste Hindu who is vegetarian and who, you know, is also very obeisant of white supremacy. While at the same time trying to say that, you know, we want to do things for our community. So essentially a lot of the minorities who live here have been excluded from a whole bunch of things just because they do not fit the picture of what Hindu Council or other Hindutva groups want to portray about India, but very harmful.
I'd want to talk about kind of maybe the risks or the further risks of potential Hindutva extremism here in Aotearoa. I mean, places like Australia and the UK have seen in the street kind of violence against Muslim communities from Hindu extremists. Is there a risk of that here in Aotearoa?
We do have a risk of that here in Aotearoa. It might not be, because Aotearoa is so small, it might not be as overt as it was in Leicester last year, or when there was a fight between the Sikh community and the Hindus, I think, at Fed Square in Melbourne as well last year. These might be sort of more isolated events, but the threat is more through disinformation and the use of artificial intelligence. I cannot give you 100% evidence about how artificial intelligence could potentially be used, but disinformation and foreign interference happened when a film called Kashmir Files was released last year in Aotearoa, and the director, producer-director of that film back in India, the Muslim community here asked the censor board to review the certification given to that film. The director and writer of that film, Vivek Agnihotri, tweeted about, it was a very specific tweet using coded language that those who follow Hindutva understand, calling the Muslim people, I think those people or something. I can't tell you right now, but it's, we have it all documented on our website. And that just set off a chain of events with white supremacists in Australia and Hindutva groups here in Aotearoa jumping onto the act, where they started sending out, you know, Islamophobic tweets and wrote to the censor board. I'm making it like a big war was happening over here, which is with all the wrong information. So the Muslim community had asked the censor board to review the certification, and they made it out to be like they're wanting to ban the film, just misquoting everything. And even the Indian High Commission jumped into this act, writing to the chief censor, which is not their business. It's none of their business to be interfering in a simple procedure like asking the censor to, chief censor to review certification for a film. That is normal democratic process, and anybody can ask for that. The Indian High Commission had no business in interfering, so we perceive that as foreign interference. David Seymour got into the act. Melissa Lee jumped into it. I think Winston Peters jumped into it. So this is about involving politicians, which should not be the case because it's not their business. But this is how we see these things being, things manifesting in Aotearoa compared to Leicester or to Australia.
That was Dr. Sapna Samant from the Aotearoa Alliance of Progressive Indians about Hindutva and its recent growth.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.